Hi, everyone, and welcome to another ESICM Next Collaboration podcast. My name is Emilio Rodriguez Ruiz. I'm an intensivist at the University Clinic Hospital in Santiago de Compostela, Spain, and an ESICM Next committee member. Joining me today, we have the great pleasure to introduce Dr. Andre Michelson, intensivist at the Department of Anesthesiology, Critical Care, Emergency Medicine, and Pain Therapy at Konstanz Hospital in Konstanz, Germany. He's also a past chair of the ethics section of the European Society of Intensive Care Medicine, and his specific area of research is clinical ethics, resulting in many publications and lectures in this field. We will be talking about an important topic that affects all healthcare professionals working in intensive care, the burnout syndrome. Andre, welcome to the program, and thank you for collaborating with us in the production of this very interesting podcast.
Thank you, Emilio. It's my pleasure to join you on this podcast.
As you all know, burnout is a psychological syndrome arising in response to chronic emotional and interpersonal stressors on the job, and it's characterized by three different features: emotional exhaustion, depersonalization, and lack of personal and professional completion. The consequences of burnout in ICU professionals are substantial, with implications for workplace morale, quality of care delivery, patient safety, and also cost of care, including those related to ICU staff turnover. Andre, if you don't mind, we can start with a generic question. In your extensive experience in clinical ethics in intensive care, why is burnout an important issue for clinical ethics?
Thank you very much, Emilio, for this question. The clinicians affected by this syndrome often report a number of symptoms. Amongst others, they feel, as you said, exhausted. They feel not appreciated. They often complain about symptoms such as headaches, sleeplessness, and diminished force, if you will. It can be summed up as probably saying that there's a gratification crisis. That is to say that what the clinicians put into their work, their energy, their time, their empathy, their nerves, so to speak, is not being gratificated as much as they would see it. And if that were only that, it would still be a problem for those affected and needed our attention. However, the consequences of the burnout syndrome for the patients and the whole work environment make it an ethically important issue, because if the clinicians affected cannot do their job, not fulfill their tasks as they should, then patient care will be worse. Errors will result. And as you said, Emilio, even staff turnover. And in this day and age, we, as the clinicians and leaders in the field, should be very, very cautious to not lose staff because there's already a staff shortage. So that altogether makes this burnout syndrome truly an ethical issue, not only in intensive care, but specifically for intensive care clinicians.
So thank you, Andre. You make clear that burnout is an important problem nowadays in our working environment. In fact, recently, Laurent Papasian and colleagues have published a systematic review and meta-analysis in Intensive Care Medicine Journal examining the prevalence of high-level burnout in physicians and nurses working in adult ICUs. They include only studies that use the inventory, Maslach burnout inventory, and as a tool to evaluate this problem, burnout, and involving at least three different ICUs. So, Andre, I'm sure you have read this article. Could you tell us, please, what is the conclusion of this article as to the prevalence and reasons for burnout, and what are the limitations of this article?
Thank you very much, Emilio. This article by Papasian and colleagues is truly an important step in the or component of the increasing literature on the burnout syndrome. What Papasian and his colleagues have done is they have made a meta-analysis that includes more than 20,000 ICU clinicians, nurses, and physicians. And to minimize heterogeneity, they took only studies that included at least three intensive care units, and that made a clear distinction between high-level burnout on the one side in nurses and on the other side in physicians. So they came up with 25 studies and found that the overall prevalence of the burnout syndrome is about 41% in ICU physicians and 44% in ICU nurses. And interestingly, there wasn't that much of a difference between the time before the COVID-19 pandemic and the time within the COVID-19 pandemic overall, although there was a slight difference between nurses and physicians. And the reasons that were set out in this article that are congruent with other studies in the field are manifold. The reasons can be due to the personal characteristics of the ICU clinicians, for instance, their socialization, if you will, their marital status, or how they think about their workload. And the reasons can also be found on the work side, if you will, especially relating to the work climate. For instance, the leadership at the workplace, the ethical climate, or the freedom that the clinicians are giving as to how they solve their tasks. The limitations of the study that the authors have very well put to know are that these studies only took, that they only used studies that used the Maslach burnout inventory. And there's a principal problem with this burnout inventory from the beginning, because the questions in that inventory are somewhat, how shall I say that, not very descriptive and not very specific. So if the question is, do you feel overworked? Well, I guess 90% of intensive care clinicians would say that at one point in their professional career. That was only a simple example, but the Maslach burnout inventory lacks specificity. And another principal limitation is that burnout still not is a disease in the ICD. It is a specific problem, but it is not a disease entity in itself, mostly because it is very difficult to discern it from depression. This having been said, nevertheless, the study shows that indeed the burnout syndrome continues to be a problem that needs our attention, both for caring for the individual clinician and for changing the workplace such that the syndrome hopefully be less prevalent in the future.
Thank you, Andre. Now let's move on. I'm sure you agree with me. Burnout syndrome has been described, measured, and even analyzed its negative consequences widely in literature. But now let's focus on interventions or strategies to deal with this important problem. Andre, what can potentially be done to alleviate the negative consequences of burnout syndrome?
Thank you, Emilio. I think this is one of the most important questions that we have to face. When my respected colleague, Professor Hillard, and myself published on burnout recently, we came principally to a very similar conclusion as this article by Papazian and colleagues. That is that the prevalence of about 40% needs us to think about how this can be improved in terms of lessening the prevalence. And what we think needs to be done is, on the one hand, increasing the resilience of the ICU clinicians, and on the other hand, change the work climate, both of which appears to be very difficult. There is no anti-burnout pill, if you so will, because changing the characteristics of persons of the ICU clinicians may be very difficult. Plus, the way that we cope with stress within our lives may be very different in different phases of our lives. So what has been proposed is for the ICU clinician to really think about him or herself and think about what makes him or her stressed, whether it is the family situation or whether it is the overall workload or whether it is the way the tasks at the work can be fulfilled. It looks like a personal social system can be very helpful. Having a partner can be very helpful. And truly something very simple that grandmother already knew is go out and do some exercise. That means relieving stress that may have accumulated at work. Relieving stress is obviously very important. But again, changing a person's characteristics is not a simple task. On the other hand, if we look at the workplace environment, there have already things been done, at least in my country, for instance, reducing the overall amount of on calls or reducing our work hours. That alone, though, has not resulted in a lesser prevalence. What probably needs to be done is integrating especially nurses in decisions about the extent of treatment. That is to say, where there is a good ethical climate that has been shown by Bo van den Bulke and colleagues recently, where there is a good ethical climate, where nurses, especially nurses, are integrated into decisions about the extent of treatment or the limitations of treatments, that probably relieves stress. Also, nurses should be given quite a way of freedom of how they do their tasks. So not a point-to-point supervision, so to speak. And also the leadership needs to be improved. Leadership alone by hierarchical means is not good. Leadership by really caring for the patients and the nurses and co-physicians is important. So Emilio, this sounds not very specific, what I'm saying, but unfortunately there is no panacea. There's no one single remedy, at least looked at it from what we know today. There always needs to be steps on both sides, the sides of the individual ICU clinician and the side of the work environment. Finally, I think it is fair to say that if hospitals do not take the burnout syndrome into consideration and try to alleviate that, then the staff will go away. And again, this is not something that we should accept. Thank you, Emilio. That is it does not sound very hopeful. On the other hand, though, we just need to be people working with people.
Yeah, I mean, in the end, is the real world. The reality is that as you say, that I agree 100% with you, there is no universal pill to solve burnout syndrome in everybody. But I think that one of the important things is to have this problem in mind, not just individually, but from a systematic point of view, the supervisors, head of departments, all the leaders in the hospital, and also us as professionals, having this problem in mind is really important in order to be able to deal with that and find solutions. So Andre, thank you so much for these important insights and for all your contributions to the field of clinical ethics in intensive care over the years. Thank you, Andre, once again for taking the time to join me on this podcast today.
Thank you, Emilio. It was my great pleasure.